Okay, hello everyone. Hi, I am Erica. This is Serpbot and Let's Encrypt Office Hours. Unless you're just sitting here because it's a nice shady spot, in which case, welcome anyway. I had in mind that this would be pretty freeform if anyone has questions. Maybe just to get a show of hands. Who came to this, like, hoping just to kind of hear what other people had to say without, like, specific questions in mind? Maybe, Okay, cool. Who had individual questions about their use of, like, oh, man, I want to use Certbot for this, but will it work for that? Or I need to use Let's Encrypt, but I'm getting rate limited, stuff like that. Who had questions like that? Okay, who had general questions about the way that Certbot or Let's Encrypt work that they think might be interesting to a larger audience? Who didn't raise their hand? Okay, interesting. Maybe I should continue asking who didn't raise their hand to the who didn't raise their hand, because I think there's still more of those. But anyway, okay, I've got a mic here. Thanks. I have a mic here for your questions, because otherwise we can sit here and stare at each other. So, okay, who has a question about Certbot and Let's Encrypt? Who came here to learn what Certbot and Let's Encrypt are? Okay. Well, this is your hour. I actually was recently informed that this might be not a universal thing. Office hours is like a university term. It means that, like, generally the professor or grad student will sit in a room and people will bring their questions. So that's what this is. If you didn't realize that, sorry. Yes, Mike.
Maybe it's not directly related to Certbot, but for using DNS challenges, I would not like to make my domain for dynamically updating. And the question is there another hook or trick to use DNS challenge without make the entire domain possibly for DNS update?
If you want to use this, yeah, go ahead. We have a helper here who also works on Certbot.
Can we, like...
Do you want to, yeah?
No, I would like to show you something. Subdelegate DNS, like a server. I wrote... I'll just see how I can get...
He wrote a thing to help you do this.
It's a subdelegate DNS. The problem actually is pretty easy to solve. You are able to, Let's Encrypt follow C names. So all you have to do pretty much is to point the C name from like the magic subdomain underscore acme dash challenge dot your actual domain dot tld to whatever domain you wish. And you can use a throwaway domain for the actual validation, so your whole DNS zone doesn't get compromised. So you create your domain dot throwaway domain dot tld CNAME, and actually update txt record to that one. But this one. I will show you. There's actual recorded video. How it actually works. I wonder if you can see. Can you see it? Like, is it large enough? And let's see. Smaller. I wonder. Where is the...
But it's on the GitHub page.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Too small. So, let's go back. Anyway, okay, I'll explain it. You have like a one-time task that's manual. You create the CNAME record to your actual domain. You want to have a certificate for your domain.cld. You create the CNAME from _acme-challenge.yourdomain.cld that points to whatever. Yeah. And another domain is the one you can like update the txt record to. And the CA will follow the CNAME and use the txt value from the throwaway domain in a sense. But what the Acme DNS does, it has an HTTP API that you will be able to use to update the txt records. So it's pretty much just a DNS server with an API, right? But the API only allows updating of txt records. So the worst case scenario, if your box gets compromised, is the same with pretty much every compromised box in regard of certificates. So the attacker will be able to get certificate for your domain, but that it limits to that. And all the credentials to the API, they are randomly generated, and you're able to pretty much use the one instance for a lot of large amount of different domains, and create a lot of API keys and use that. So it's basically a sub-delegate domain server. I'll see if there's something else.
And there's this ACME-DNS.
Yep.
Yes.
So, yeah. Did that answer to your question? There's a lot, lots. There's a lot in that one, but yeah. Yeah, thanks.
Also, Peter has just arrived, who was around when it was founded. So if you have more questions about that as well, those are also on the board. I am a developer on CertBot, and you just got answered questions by another CertBot developer. So definitely here for those. Yeah, those mics.
Thank you. I just attended your usability talk, and as a developer in system administration, the best part is having certificates. The worst part was the user interface. Well, first the sudo thing to automatically update stuff. I can't use that on my servers. But lots of things change. There are better. There are other clients, and that works. But what I'm still wondering is, two things. One, I didn't have to supply an email address when I created the account, so I don't get messages. And two, I'm getting lots and lots of emails that my certificates are about to expire, but when I actually check them, it's not.
I don't know about the second one, but you don't actually technically need an email to sign up. There we have a flag, register unsafely without email. There's reasons that we might want that email there. As for, so what do you consider about to expire?
Well, can you repeat the question?
We send them like weeks in advance so that people have time and remember.
Yes. And
yeah,
because I've multiple servers hosting the same domain, so I request them for multiple servers, mm-hmm. and I renew them automatically every 60 days or something, and I get those emails as well.
You renew them every 60 days, and you're getting those emails?
Yeah.
Ooh, okay, yeah.
And that's, yeah.
Write that one down. Thanks for reporting this bug. Other bug reports are welcome.
All right, I'll do that next time I get one of those emails. I'll follow up with an actual bug report.
Thanks.
There was a big period like maybe a year ago, but that's actually happened for everybody. Somehow they didn't get like a report.
So, from what I know, the certificate expires after 90 days. Okay. Do you see statistics that a lot of people try it, get a certificate, maybe install it on some server, and then forget to renew it? Because then there are a lot of websites will be like with a warning and the user's behavior will change. That, yeah.
I don't know if we have how often.
I don't have a number. The thing I will say that we've been doing, which is at least for CertBot users, and of course Let's Encrypt is bigger than the CertBot user base, is just trying to make, for the default case, automatic renewal be the default. So if we can figure out how to automatically renew your certificate for you, we'll ask you, hey, do you want us to run a cron job to automatically renew this? And if you say yes, we'll just do it for you. Because if people are running around doing homework every time their certificates need to be renewed, we haven't done things right. We're living in the wrong universe. We want to live in a world where once you enable TLS, it stays enabled and doesn't fall over because no one's looking at the box. So for us, the settling on 3 months was partly about saying, we know we need to automate this. If we pick a year, we're just pushing off, like putting off the time when we like figure out how to do automation correctly. And maybe for the first 6 to 12 months that we launched the project, the tools we were providing were not as polished as they needed to be for that. I think they've gotten much better. And so now if you run CertBot through Debian or Ubuntu, it auto-renews for you. We're about to ship that for CertBot auto users as well.
Do you have any plans for like a pass? Like for example, for the big players like Azure or Amazon? So where you have just a platform as a server, where you have a website, you don't have access to so much.
It's already happened. Like most of those platforms, the ones where it makes sense, have already integrated with us. So WordPress, Squarespace. If you're a large hosting provider and you weren't doing TLS before, most of those people have turned around and started using Let's Encrypt automatically or making it an option for their customers.
I tried to have a look at how to install it, and it's like there are some integrations with Azure, but it's like complicated, and I really wonder if after 3 months I don't forget about it.
Yeah, I think Amazon, if I remember correctly, uses their own certificates. Like they have a platform as a service certificate provider, but they're not going through Let's Encrypt. They're just doing it themselves, which I might not be super surprised to see Azure doing, rather than the Let's Encrypt integration.
Yeah, the lots of people who host on EC2, of course, use Let's Encrypt, because with EC2, you're not getting you're not getting a fully managed service. You're just getting a box with a shell on it. And so for that portion of Amazon's user base, lots of them are using us.
But S3 is using...
Right, for S3, Amazon launched its own CA at about the same time as Let's Encrypt. We talked to them a little bit during the launch process, and we're like, oh, you're trying to do this, we're trying to do this. Okay, like, we're kind of... We have the same objective, which is encrypting the web, and we were working on it together.
Thank you.
Anyone? Things you always wanted to know?
Thank you. I'm also a developer, and I'm working with several environments like Ruby on Rails and Elixir, for example. So they are not directly known, I would say, to web servers like Nginx or Apache, and so there is no real automatic configuration possible, and I fully understand that. But I think it would be a chance to get more people like me. I'm using Let's Encrypt for years, meanwhile, so I'm happy with it. But I think it would be a possibility to get more people on board by providing more detailed documentation on doing maybe not automatic installation, but more like hands-on with special configuration needs.
Have you looked into either our hooks or our plugin system?
To be honestly, the initial installation worked fine, and then when I tried to renew, I got the error message that I wouldn't be allowed to do so because I would be lacking sufficient privileges, which in direct translation isn't true because I'm the root of this server. So I was a bit surprised, and then I just googled for the reason, and with a combination of the application server that I'm using and somebody else pointed me that you just have to configure the proper public directory, and then the Let's Encrypt automatic bot knows where to put the certificate, and then everything works out nicely. So it was just putting one line of configuration in the Let's Encrypt config, and now everything works fine. And to find these little nuggets, that's the challenge for me.
So there were permissions on some directory that needed to be changed?
No, Let's Encrypt CertBot didn't know about where to put the certificate to, because it's not the standard path. It's not the standard path for Nginx, but the passenger web application server has a different logics regarding public paths, and obviously Let's Encrypt CertBot didn't know how to interpret the configuration file of the virtual host.
Mm-hmm. So, if I'm understanding correctly, you wanted CertBot to put the certificate that it gets in a particular spot.
Right. Mm-hmm. That solved it, so that now update is handled completely automatically.
Nice, yeah, and then pointed directly to that file there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the way we have it there is everything is symlinked. So we have the actual files kept in an archive directory, and then the live active certificate just points to the other ones.
Sorry, I wasn't clear. The problem was not the location of the certificate, but this the proof. I don't know what's the name
the
of
chain?
That.
Acme challenge.
Yes, right. That's the one.
Which of those was it? The
challenge file.
The challenge file. Oh. Interesting.
It was not in a public directory regarding that application server, so obviously it couldn't find it, and so it thought I don't have permission to to manage that
so
server.
So the application server couldn't access the file?
The application server wouldn't serve mm-hmm. that file because it was in a different location than it was.
Was the application running as root?
The application was not running as root. No.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, we've had a lot of bugs with some version of that character, you know, people needed to set some permission in their web server to make the Webroot accessible. If they're using the Webroot plugin, because we have multiple different plugins, Eric has written this Nginx plugin, which you can now use, so then you don't need to put a file in any directory. It'll go straight to your Nginx configuration and modify that. So, but it illustrates the complexity of the task that CertBot is trying to do, which is like, okay, you're running on some web server, and there are like 10,000 different ways that web servers can be configured, and
with application servers behind these web servers then interfering with the web servers even.
Exactly. So what we provide is a very flexible toolkit gives you, you know, usually 5 different ways to provide the proof successfully and get a certificate at the end. But it's hard to guarantee for every use case that there's a magic thing that will work for everyone, right? All we do is provide, you know, 5 different kinds of magic. You've got to try them or Google the error message you get and figure, oh, okay, like in my case, I needed to do X.
So it sounds like what would have been useful at the time when you were figuring this out was an explanation of what CertBot was doing and where it was putting all these different files and what it was trying to do. Is that right?
Yeah, maybe yeah. Kind of an exotic configurations page where also people can contribute what they have found out, because I assume that you can't even imagine what could happen because there are so many different kinds of using Apache.
So it sounds like you eventually found out what you had to do. How did you find that information?
By Googling it. Different person figured it out. It was just adding the line of the webroot and that fixed it.
Yeah.
So it's a one-liner in the end, and I can share that with my community and my bubble. That's quite easy. But obviously, I couldn't make this information accessible to other people who are using the same web service. Mm-hmm. If I could provide these kinds of information to the CertBot documentation, maybe that could help.
Mm-hmm. Well, we definitely would love any pull requests to the documentation. It's all on GitHub. And we, in fact, we've had a bunch of updates to our documentation from an outside contributor who's been very helpful at explaining at least some of those things. I don't think we currently have a section for exotic configurations, but hey, if you want to create it, it's open source. It's what it's for, right? For now, I think we mostly use the community forum for that, but we'd love to have more documentation about how to do it for a particular web server. That'd be great if you want to contribute that back.
Didn't even know about that forum, for example. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
And thanks for providing the certificates. It's awesome.
Welcome. Okay, if you just came in, we are doing CertBot and Let's Encrypt Office Hours, where you bring your questions about how CertBot works for you, how CertBot can work for you better. If you have suggestions as well, we'll take those also. Anything you always wanted to know, our deepest, darkest secrets, people, developers' favorite color, what Peter eats for breakfast, anything is a game. I'm volunteering Peter about the breakfast thing. That might not be accurate. Anyone? Anyone? Questions? Yeah.
I guess this is the question, Chair. So I think what Let's Encrypt is doing is great. I use it for all my certificates now. It's so easy. And it's a wonderful advancement for encryption on the web already. But it's still right now creating for people who need a lot of certificates, or I made a way, or don't want to spend lots of money on certificates. There's still only one CA, Let's Encrypt, that does this. I know there's been lots of talk about another CA can use the Acme protocol. It's open source, so like that. I'm just curious, from your point of view, since you probably know more than all of us here because you're more involved, is there any actual interest from other CAs or another organization trying to take up the same thing to add, basically try to become a competitor of you guys? Not that you need to compete because it's a free service, but I fear like one day maybe say Let's Encrypt goes down, worst case scenario, but then now there's a giant vacuum versus having a backup plan.
That's something I think we all agree with also. Like, it's not a competition. It's not like we're trying to get the most active users. We all think it'd be great if someone else wants to come in, step up. It's just, it's, you know, an organization. It takes time. It takes resources to do things like this. If you happen to work for an organization that wants to run their own version of one of these, that would obviously be welcome. We've seen some CAs using, if not Acme, then Acme-like things, but that's more for like meant for corporate internal certificate things that they're selling as a software as a service. We haven't really seen anyone else interested in doing the completely open to the public, get your certificate here thing. Except, I think, as we mentioned before, maybe Peter mentioned, Amazon does something similar, but only for their customers. Just having something that's completely open, which even having it for specific services isn't the worst case, as long as what we see is having automated or even automatic built-in certificates for a way that people can do things is something that I think Let's Encrypt has helped push that there wasn't as much of an impetus for before. Having literally another Let's Encrypt is probably nice, but even just seeing people do roll their own versions of it for their own software is already a win.
Okay. I guess the follow-up to my question is, what in creating Let's Encrypt and getting trusted by all the major browsers, what was probably the largest hurdle that if another company was to take on that challenge, like you just said, they would encounter?
So there are two. I mean, one is it turns out that you don't need to get trusted by the major browsers. That's strangely irrelevant. What you need is to find an existing certificate authority that will cross-sign your certificate. And you need to pass an audit. And those are both quite a lot of work. You know, you need to either like by charm or payment persuade a CA to do this, and then you need to do a lot of paperwork and a lot of like security through bureaucracy to pass the audit, and then you need the operational sophistication to run a service at scale that's doing security critical stuff, and that's almost completely orthogonal to the bureaucracy piece, right? You know, you have to do real computer security and then like bureaucratic computer security, and the cost of doing that, you know, I think ISRG, which is the organization that is the home for Let's Encrypt, like lots of the development still happens at EFF and a little bit still at Mozilla. That organization now has a budget in the range of $1 to $2 million a year. And so that gives you an indication of like the ongoing expense for doing this. And maybe you could do it a little bit more cheaply, especially if you weren't starting at this, you know, at this point we actually have serious scaling costs with Let's Encrypt. The question is, who is going to show up and stake roughly that amount of money on a new project to do something that's already happening? And the answer might be like, there's not that much incentive to do it. So we would, I think, really like there to be another CA, especially another CA that like has an open API, ideally speaking Acme, but maybe, you know, speaking something else, whatever it is, like that would be great. It'd be better for the internet to have something as a fallback in case we fall apart for some reason.
Yeah, and I think it would be easier to get that number down because, well, it depends how you do it. So Boulder, the implementation of the Let's Encrypt backend, is open source. So it's much easier just to jump in and use that. It might perhaps be more ideal to create a completely separate second implementation. That way bugs in one aren't also in the other. But even if a separate organization literally just wanted to run that software and they already have secure servers that they can use, that already takes you a lot of the way there because you could share some of that effort and still get the benefits.
Probably the most likely place to look for this is the existing other CAs, right? Like, it's a lot of work to become a CA for the first time, but Amazon's a CA, Google's a CA, there are the CAs who used to sell certificates, or still sell certificates to everyone. Maybe one of those organizations is the best place for us to look for a second free service.
Thank you.
Thanks for asking. Good questions. Microphone offered free of charge.
Yeah, so Let's Encrypt is practically making an existing process available to a larger population, let's say. Where do you see it going? I mean, as a project and as a, let's say, industry. The certificate authority.
Where do we see it going? Like, what's the end game? So we're not. We recently passed, I guess it's been a few months now, passed the 50% mark of web traffic being encrypted, which was a big milestone. But that's halfway there. I was recently looking at some projections from like 2014, 2015 that were like, oh yeah, by 2016, 80% of the internet is going to be encrypted. We're not there yet. There's a long tail. There's a lot of sites, problems to fix. Like, a lot of the traffic goes through a few small players, but the rest of the traffic still needs to be encrypted. There's still a while to go. And we're biting off a lot of that in chunks. More and more certificates are being served. But I think finishing up that process, like, what's the old saying? Like, 90% of the work takes 10% of the time and vice versa, right? So there's still a long way to go there, I think, is the foreseeable future, and continuing to make it easier for people to use their certificates and all the different use cases that people might need. So like different ways of authentication, for example, like having the DNS challenges versus HTTP, and getting that down. It's currently being standardized in IETF. So there's even a process for having new ways of proving that you own a domain. So that'll get more people on also. But I think getting to that 100 or near 100% of traffic, there's no reason. I think we believe that there's no reason that the traffic needs to be unencrypted at this point, and getting to that place is the goal.
Yeah, so that's, Eric is totally right. There's actually an amazing amount of work still left to be done for encrypting the internet. Another project that we're going to be working on in the next year is mail servers. So getting Let's Encrypt to auto-deploy to mail servers, and then saying that's comparatively easy. The hard piece is no mail server on the internet is currently configured to check certificates. And so what we're going to try and do there is say, okay, wait a minute. If I'm delivering to a random mail server, okay, I'm not going to necessarily expect encryption or check a certificate. But if I'm delivering to a mail server that has marked itself as committed to a secure deployment, I'm now going to check the certificate and fail, or at least alert very loudly if I don't get a valid start TLS connection. So we're trying to close that authentication gap in email delivery. That's one objective. A second objective is, at the moment, if you can compromise routers or BGP or DNS, you can steal a Let's Encrypt certificate, right? Because our validation methods are TCP, which is the same as the previous CAs. But we'd like to offer a way of ratcheting that up. Once you've got a Let's Encrypt certificate, there should be a way of saying, now that I have this, TCP is no longer good enough. You now need crypto to get the next certificate. And the problem with that is you need really good failure recovery modes. When someone does this, they install Let's Encrypt or CertBot on a box, they get a certificate, they pull up the ladder after them, and they say only pure crypto now, and then they accidentally delete that virtual machine, or the hard disk that they had on that server dies. How do we make sure they haven't hosed themselves permanently because we turned on this feature for them? So we have like engineering work to do on that front to figure out what the security ratchet will look like and how to make it recoverable and still secure. So those are examples of like the hard engineering problems that we see ahead for us to solve.
Regarding the mail server, I'm running mail server with other people together, and we are refraining from using Let's Encrypt for the mail server, since we want to make sure that the traffic, so our threat model is more or less, so it's more an activist mail server, so our threat model is state and state agencies, so it's easy to create, whatever, by state-driven or other CAs, a valid certificate. So we are more in the model of pinning specific certificates of other trustworthy servers, mail servers, and so on. So this would be hard to do with Let's Encrypt, since due to the 90 days or less expiry date, will be so we put some automation into this model, but it's
what do you currently do when their certificates expire?
Currently the other mail servers that we communicate with and that we want to have a reliable communication via their certificates, not just random valid certificates, but their certificates, then we define their certificate names and so on, and we have some exchange pool of some Git repositories that we share and sign and so on. So it's a not so great process, but it's paranoid and it works.
So you're using Git as your protocol for this, basically.
But it's bad, yeah.
Yeah. So SSH, and do you sign your Git commits? We actually thought about trying to use Git for this, and I think probably that's not how it'll happen in the end. You need a place that's... It's a little bit like the preload list for browsers that says, for this domain, always expect TLS for email. And then secondly, always check a certificate. And then thirdly, maybe pin a certificate, right? Which doesn't have to be CA signed, right? Or pin the private key. So then if you're using Let's Encrypt and Certbot, you can make a new certificate every 90 days, but keep reusing the private key. And so you have a pinning thing through one path and then a certificate through another, but the certificate updates and the key stays the same.
So this pinning of the private key would be a solution. I'm not in that depth. So is this available for PostFix or something?
Well, at the moment...
This is something we're working on.
At the moment, actually, you could totally do it. So it wouldn't be a PostFix plugin yet. What you would do is you would use Certbot to get the certificate, and then you use a hook to install it in PostFix. Copy it to your PostFix configuration.
I meant the key pinning. The private key pinning.
I think we actually might have just shipped that.
I think there was a pinning for certificates. I had this feeling of certificate, not for the key. That would solve the problem, obviously.
I don't want to make a commitment about what you can put in that PostFix config file.
Thank you.
But if you can, maybe if you can't put it in a PostFix configuration file, but you do a separate check outside of that to check that the key is the same, like, I don't know whether or not PostFix can do this, but if you can have a mechanism for pinning the key, like, you could do that externally, is what I'm saying.
We'd also maybe love to work with your project, because you've essentially built a smaller version of what we want to build into Certbot, and maybe done it slightly differently, but it's the same use case, and we just want to scale it to the whole internet.
But the threat model is somehow different, so we are thinking about a state adversary, and you are thinking about non-encrypted traffic, and users trusting in somehow authorized good traffic.
In the long run, we want to protect against state adversaries as well. So at the moment, we don't, of course, because the state adversaries have their own certificate authorities, but... there's a protocol called CAA that you can use to announce over DNS which certificate authorities can sign for you. So you can use that to lock down which CAs can issue for you, and you could do that in combination with the thing I just said we're working on, which is a way of saying with Let's Encrypt, at some point you can say only cryptographic proof of control of domain. So once you get a Let's Encrypt certificate, you keep chaining to your pass keys for authentication, and then the combination of CAA plus now Let's Encrypt won't be vulnerable to TCP based attacks, then we'd be potentially hardened against a state adversary for authentication. I mean, it's a couple of pieces, but I think we also want to be compatible with people who have the use case you're describing. We'd want, if we're making an announcement protocol that allows people to announce security policy for their mail servers, you know, one policy you can announce is always do start TLS. A second policy you can announce is check my certificate using the public trust CA stuff. A third policy is this exact pin key or this exact pin certificate. And so we probably want to support the type of pinning you're doing in addition to the other kinds that we do by default.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm... Sorry? Okay. I'm not quite sure, but isn't that DNSSEC and Dane can be useful for that?
Yes. So, in theory, so it's not just... the question was, can you not just use DNSSEC and Dane for the same purpose? Now, the issue there is that one deployment of those protocols is so... limited. DNSSEC is getting some deployment. Dane has basically not been deployed, and so you can't get clients that speak it. And then the second problem is it doesn't really protect you against state adversaries. It sort of changes the state adversaries a little bit. It's basically whoever's above you in the DNS hierarchy can attack you. Other people can't, so it's better, but it doesn't totally protect against it. So yes, I think people have talked about Dane as a solution to this problem for a long time, and it hasn't happened yet.
Why did you choose Python to implement CertBot and not C or JavaScript or whatever is out there?
So when we were making that call, I think we thought Python, this is a great, in fact, I think one of our project members, Noah Schwartz, has given a whole talk at PyCon about what we liked and what we regretted about this choice. But so giving this sort of 30-second summary of that, Python is pretty flexible and has a lot of support for wrangling your operating system, right? It's a high-level language that protects you against large categories of memory safety bugs and so forth that lets you change stuff in your OS. The stuff that we've really found difficult about Python, its dependency management is not great. So working with pip has been a source of continuous pain. That's issue one. Issue two is its OpenSSL bindings are really not good. So Python, you know, we've used Python cryptography, and Python cryptography, the issue is not that it doesn't work, it's just that it's fragile. In particular, when there's a new version of OpenSSL, it tends to break the CFFI bindings into Python into Python cryptography. So that started maybe to get better because Python cryptography has started to ship its own bundled versions of OpenSSL. And that means they have to take every OpenSSL CVE and scramble when they get one. And it means we'll have to take OpenSSL CVEs and scramble via Python cryptography. But it's probably worth it because now you have less probability that when you type import cryptography in Python, your interpreter explodes with a CFFI binding issue. So I think those are the big pain points were like dependency management, which meant that especially early on, people would get this worse install experience from us, and OpenSSL support, which of course caused people to have to compile the bindings. It was a lot of pain of that sort. In terms of other languages that we could have picked, I think the weird, there's now an Acme client written in every language, basically. So you can actually compare to the other Acme clients that have wound up being our competitors, basically, to CertBot. There are two, I think, that are really interesting. One's written in Go, and Go has the advantage of better dependency management. It's cleaner in that respect and great built-in crypto. The big problem is it basically doesn't run on 32-bit systems. So we couldn't give everyone a CertBot, a copy of CertBot via Go, we didn't think. The other one is, of all languages, Bash. So acme.sh is a pretty good Acme client that's written in Bash. And of course, that's the worst language imaginable to do software engineering in, but the thing that they got by choosing Bash was you have very few dependencies. It just runs on almost every Unix system, and they depend on, I think, like Netcat for their network communication and curl for fetching URLs and speaking to the web, and OpenSSL. They shelter OpenSSL, and people use it and it works. And it doesn't, especially early on, it was like you didn't need as much stuff on your box. You didn't need a bunch of Python libraries. So I think those were the two other languages we could have picked, and the reasons for not picking them were probably reasonable, but came with other prices. And we would never have thought of picking Bash. It was very unintuitive that was actually a great choice. But
sorry if this question was asked before I came. Does anyone vendor of Internet of Things have reached you to do a collaboration about renewal certification on Internet of Things?
Sorry, certification?
Certification renewals, etc. on Internet of Things. Have every
Oh, yes, is the short answer. So the members of ISRG include companies like Cisco, who help fund Let's Encrypt, and they are definitely interested in IoT versions of this thing. We also get questions about certificates for phone numbers, and I think those things, so there are two separate projects, the CertBot project, which is housed at EFF, and then Let's Encrypt at ISRG, and I think those questions are coming into Let's Encrypt. And the answer thus far is yes, we'll consider them once Let's Encrypt feels like it's really on top of certificate issuance at the scale that it needs to happen, we'll turn around and think, okay, can we issue like 10 times more certificates to IoT devices that don't have public names, like maybe in some other namespace? Of course, in the meantime, if your IoT device has a domain name, you can use Let's Encrypt. So it's more, would we support a separate type of certificate for a much more expansive namespace?
Thanks. So my question is a bit related to that. I recently played a bit around with OpenWRT and building custom firmware images. So that's basically a custom firmware for many home routers. And usually the traffic to the router is unencrypted because by default that thing starts a web server, then you can log in, start configuring your network settings, Wi-Fi settings, and so on, and everything that goes to the router is unencrypted. And I would like to change that to have it encrypted by default. But that's a bit tricky because either you will access the device by the IP address, which is 192.168.0.1, and you cannot issue a certificate for that, or you would use something like a virtual name, something like router.home.
Well, this is for a local network, right? Or
yes.
So if it's only for a local network, presumably you could run your own PKI, right? You don't have to go through something like Let's Encrypt. You could use a self-signed certificate that you know the key of and just distribute between the devices on your own network.
Yes, so I could, of course, do that, and it's also already supported. The problem is just when you flash that the firmware image by default, the connection is unencrypted, and you can, of course, enable crypto with a self-signed certificate, but then you still get browser warnings, and it's getting harder and harder to click around those browser warnings. So the best solution I could currently come up for is that I operate a service somewhere on the internet, like register a public domain name. Let's name it myhomerouter.org. And every time such a firmware image is flashed, the router contacts the myhomerouter.org service, registers a unique ID for itself, like 12345.myhomerouter.org, uses this public domain name to get, well, host name to get a Let's Encrypt certificate. And then, because it also runs a DNS server, say 12345.myhomerouter.org is 192.168.0.1. And then it could, like, out of the box, serve its web configuration interface in an encrypted manner. And that is kind of very weird hack. And I wonder whether there is a better way how it could be done with Let's Encrypt, so that I could have like a firmware image for a router. You just need to flash it, and you assume that the router has internet access by DHCP or something like that when it's booted for the first time, that by default the web interface would be encrypted.
It does sound like this is the same problem, right? You have this device without a domain name that you want a certificate for.
Kind of, but now I have the advantage that this device is also running the local DNS server, and you can do more tricks there, though it's the default gateway in the network. It's not like an IoT device that's just on the network, but it's a default gateway, so you have a little bit more power there.
You can serve a redirect to the synthetic domain name.
Yes, so that would happen. Then when somebody enters the IP address of that router, it would establish an HTTP connection. The router's web server would say redirect to https.routerid.myhomerouter.org, and then it would serve the encrypted website. When it's permanent redirect, then by default, everyone who once accessed the router will probably bookmark the encrypted version of that configuration URL. But it still sounds like a hack, but I don't know a better solution for that.
Yeah, can you? I mean, if you propose one, we're open to it.
That's currently the best one I can propose. I can also try to implement it, but it looks ugly.
The interesting thing about it is you have this trust on first use thing that you're trying to do, right? You have no canonical way of identifying that router, right? It's like a box that just looks like every other one that comes along from that manufacturer or from your home router project. And then somehow you want to kind of, once you've seen that very generic looking box, you want to go from that to, no, I know it's my home router. I flashed like Eric's firmware onto it, and so I know it's like the right thing. And so you kind of get that with the unique domain name that your router picks from the service, right? It's like, okay, it picked like slithytove.homerouter.org or whatever, and then that's now a memorable thing, and you get this property that if it picked that and then someone switches out your home router for a different one that looks exactly the same but has different key material on it, suddenly it won't be able to keep the name that it had previously. So you at least get the continuity property that you wanted from Trust on First Use. It feels a little hackish to get there via the browser, and so maybe the right way of asking this question is, are there features we would want Chrome and Firefox and company to ship that make it a little bit less painful to get a Trust on First Use experience for certain types of domain names? I'm sure that they're going to push back on us and say, well, anything you design for this purpose is going to get abused by evil people with other purposes. But that maybe is the right place to think about it. Is there a browser feature that's going to help with these use cases?
Yes, like when you maybe say, okay, that everyone who uses a private IP address in the URL could get easier next grid for the untrustworthy certificate.
Yeah. You could probably add the certificate directly to the browser without... I mean,
sure, but I want to get around the next screen. I want to have something.
But like before you do that, you could add it in settings. Mm-hmm. Just import it directly into the certificate store, and then you don't. Then you miss the page, but it does the exact same thing.
Sure, but what I want is basically somebody types in the IP address in the browser bar, hits enter, gets an encrypted connection without a warning.
So, ironically, we probably hurt this use case historically. With the SSL Observatory project, we found all these certificates that were being issued back in like 2010 and earlier by CAs that were doing this. And you know, our co-author of that paper, I think, took the CAs to task for doing this. He's like, you can't issue certificates for like 192.168.1.1 because it's failing. It's like fundamentally not performing the authentication task that a certificate is supposed to perform. And that's true. And the fact that there were thousands of certificates for that domain name was of course evidence for that, given to many different people. But it maybe also like a, you know, missed the point that you want opportunistic encryption for a use case like this.
Yes.
Maybe now, so I guess maybe you could try to propose a standard for opportunistic encryption to like shared domain names like mail like mail or localhost or 192.168.1.1, and I think maybe that's the way to move forward with that. It's like propose that spec, and then again we have the problem of how to get browsers to accept it, and they could render it with some like the crossed out HTTPS and say, yeah, okay, it's opportunistic to that host name because we know there's no other way to do it.
That might actually not be the most far reaching thing, because like if you're using I don't remember if it's localhost or what localhost maps to, but something in the browsers, they don't give you the warnings for the mixed content, right? If you're running whatever it is locally. So like they do already make some sorts of exceptions, just might be expanding that exception class is maybe an achievable goal. But, you know, I don't speak for the browsers into how likely they are to do that. But they've done things in this category before of skipping warnings for particular use cases. Yes.
I must admit, I haven't looked very recently, but the last time I looked, the Windows story wasn't completely finished.
Would you like to finish it for us?
I'm not sure. But maybe you can talk something about it.
Our Windows story is not completely finished. The people who work like most of their time just don't have that deep Windows expertise to just throw something together. And we have like some possible outside contributors who have said they might be able to do it, but it's tough if they're not like people that we are with talking to all the time. It's a thing that will maybe happen. We've had several people say that, oh yeah, I could do that, but we haven't seen it happen yet. If you happen to have lots of Windows expertise and want to do a port for us, we would love to see that.
Yeah, well, the certbot running in Python certainly doesn't help. It doesn't help much, I mean.
It's interesting. When we first launched Let's Encrypt, we talked to Microsoft a little bit, and the people we talked to at Microsoft said, actually, Python is fine for, like, for an official Microsoft product, it would be a huge amount of work if we do it in native Windows land. But for, like, a little, like, for a hackerish thing that runs on Windows, Python is fine. We have Python on Windows. We'll even help you with this. And then that team wound up just disappearing and not working with us and doing other things. So in theory, they thought it, the people at Microsoft thought Python was survivable on Windows. I honestly don't know enough about that, like the reality of what pain you encounter. I'm sure there's some. I think we'd certainly be interested in people who have an important need for this. If you host a lot of stuff on Windows and you know other companies that do, and particularly if you want to, like, I mean, you may have engineering talent to do this in-house or just want to give a grant to ISRG or EFF to do it. I think we'd be open to people who say, yeah, we'll fund a developer and for a year and then we'll implement all of that stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, okay. Well, I don't have the funds right now. Thanks.
I mean, and we'll also try to fundraise for it. It's not something, it's on our to-do list. It's just, there's a lot on our to-do list.
Yeah, no, I basically wanted to know where it was on your to-do list. That's basically what my question was.
It might not be the worst thing to do a crowdfunding campaign for. Just say, okay, we need like to fund a developer for 1 to 2 years to make this happen. Okay, here's the price. Like, let's ask the internet to do it. If there are enough people who need it, it'll happen.
Okay, I was a bit late, so maybe this was asked already. What is the reason that I have to have port 80 open for the standard challenge to be for the renew? So let's say I don't have access to DNS so that I can set the DNS, and with the standard challenge I have to have always, I cannot do the renew on port 443. I have to have 80 open.
You should be able to using SNI, using TLS SNI. Do you know which authentication method you're using?
Yeah, I've tried using with the certbot. I've tried using TLS, but it didn't work. It just says that it's not possible.
You're probably using the webroot plugin as an authenticator. Which web server are you using?
Oh, I do that manually with the web servers. So I just use the standard plugin without any, I mean, not the plugin. I just use the standard without anything. Just raw certificate authentication.
Do you use certbot cert only? Like, what flags are you giving to the command?
So you're saying that it's possible? Okay, then I will. Yeah.
No. My guess is I think there's a real issue. So what he's probably doing is running certbot cert only with --/ webroot. And then he's got you've got a firewall or something that blocks
it
port 80?
It is possible. It is possible to do it without having port 80 open.
Okay, that was my question. And another question, because I have many servers behind firewall, so I cannot use random ports for the challenge, I cannot renew my certificates on the different servers. So because I have the web ports are random ports that all point to different servers behind my main router.
So Erica, there is a real issue there. So people who use the webroot authenticator and just want to drop a file on their system, on their file system to renew, need port 80, need a web server that's answering on port 80. And the reason is, so Acme has a bunch of different challenge types that it uses to prove control of a domain name. And the ones that exist right now are HTTP 01, which means you fetch a URL and you get Let's Encrypt sees a magic token on port 80. Yeah. Or TLS SNI 01, where Let's Encrypt sees a magic certificate on port 443. Or DNS, where you query a special domain name and you get a special value back on port 53. And maybe your question ultimately is, why is there not an HTTPS 01 challenge that where you see a special file, not a special certificate on port 443?
Yes.
And the reason we didn't put that in the protocol was because we noticed this problem with web servers that were configured with a large number of domain names, maybe say 100 domain names or something on port 80, and maybe five of those domain names on port 443. And the what you would expect commonly is if you go to port 443 for a domain that's not one of the five that are correctly configured, it should give you an error of some sort. But what the web servers would actually, what Apache and Nginx actually do is they serve alphabetically the first domain as the default over TLS. And so what that does is it creates a situation where for the 95 people who don't have HTTPS yet, the five domains that already do, one of them has the magic ability to get certificates for all the other domain names. So on some shared Unix systems, this would actually create a privilege escalation between one of the host domains to other host domains. So I go, I log onto some Unix server and I make AAA.com and I make it TLS and I get a certificate for it, and now I can get a certificate for these other 100 random people who are hosted on the same machine as me. So for that reason, we didn't allow HTTPS 01 into the protocol. We might add it in the future, but it would have to check the certificate. So this would actually be, I talked before about the mechanism, once you've got a certificate from us, you could keep using cryptography to prove control of the domain for renewal. So HTTPS 01 wouldn't give you a certificate on day one when you first use Let's Encrypt, but it would let you renew. And so we're probably going to implement this. In the meantime, here are your options. If you don't want to serve on port 80, serve a redirect to 443. And then the existing challenge type will work for you. So if you just put a rule in your web server, okay, listen 80, redirect always 80 to 443, it'll work. The challenge will accept the redirect. The other options are use TLS SNI 01, the challenge type that supports 443, but for that you have to deploy a special certificate. And so...
Maybe I can use Nginx on the router with SNI and proxying the requests.
Exactly. If you've got Nginx running, we've shipped it for a while, but Erica has actually made it very reliable, so we now offer it to everyone by default, basically. You can use certbot --nginx, and it'll walk over to your Nginx configuration and configure TLS SNI 01. So it'll put in the certificate into the configuration file and then take it out again once it's, so edits the config file, puts in the certificate on a test challenge domain, gets the certificate, and then removes it. So if you're okay having that temporary change to your Nginx file, we can do that for you on 443.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, well, thank you all for coming. Thank you for asking questions. I hope you were interested by the answers.